Today's guest is Dr. Anthony Jay. I first discovered him by reading his best-selling book and one of my favorites, Estrogeneration. Dr. Jay offers private genetic consults through his company, AJ Consulting. He has a bachelor's in with a double major in biology and theology, a PhD in biochemistry, and worked as a scientific researcher at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where he researched stem cells, epigenetics, and infrared light. He is an avid outdoorsman and is married with children, and he had some very interesting things to say.
Problem today, of course, is that the video games and all this is so designed to basically entrap their attention span and to just really like overstimulate the kids and to suck them into this. If you allow that, then they don't want to go outside. They don't want to wrestle. They don't want to whatever. So you can suppress all of that natural, healthy, physical stimulation by overdoing the TVs and the computers and the phones. And a lot of parents do that. And part of it, it's laziness because it's easier to just give them a phone and say, sit down here and I'll come back in 3 hours, right? At the end of the day, you get out of parenting what you put into it. If you put in the time and you really get to know your kid and you really spend a lot of time with them, and then if you have something that you need, you tell them, I need this, I need your help with this, you need to go out and mow the lawn or whatever, they'll do it because they respect you and you have a relationship. If you never develop that relationship and you didn't put the time in and you didn't put the effort, then you just end up with a huge battle on your hands and it just amplifies and gets harder, especially when you have a lot of kids. You get what you put into it. You get out what you put in. So it's worth putting in the extra time.
Welcome to the Strong Man Podcast with Dr. Rimka. One mom's quest to support her son through his rites of passage and becoming what I hope is a man of courage, resilience, and compassion in a world seemingly gone mad. Welcome back to the Strong Man Podcast, guys. And I'm here with Dr. Anthony Jay. And I'm just going to, you go by Anthony, right? Not from Jersey.
I'm not Italian.
Not at all. Yeah. No. So if anybody, y'all are seeing him in his little red bearded face, is very far from a Guido Gambino here. He's looking very Irish. Mm-hmm. Are you Irish?
Oh yeah. Yeah. When I went to Ireland, it was when George W. Bush was president and everybody hated him over there. This was back before I had money and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I was hitchhiking and I would carry like an Irish flag and put my thumb on it. Right. They'd pick me up. Even in France, I was doing the same thing over there.
Yeah. Well, it's like when I travel a lot and we would go to a lot of countries and we would always put Canadian flags on the backpack so that everybody think you're Canadian, you're not American, like I'm neutral, don't mess with me. Yeah, that's one of those trips, those tips when you're like backpacking through Costa Rica or Mexico, right? I've been there, trust me. Yeah. So this podcast, you know, a little bit different, kind of explain, and I appreciate you doing it. It's called the Strong Man Podcast, and it started from me as a single mom trying to figure out, like having this aha moment that my sweet little baby boy was going to be a man. And I'm like, oh shit. I'm not raising a boy. I'm cultivating and trying to raise a good man, an honorable man of integrity and courage and what I want him to be like, right? So I started looking at all the men in my life that I admire that have some quality or trait that I want him to be like. Well, I want more of this. I want some of this. And started asking them, hey, what do you wish you would have known, you wish your mother would have said, you wish your mother wouldn't have done? What advice do you have for me? Because I do know at the end of the day, and I've been saying this to my patients for a long time, I used to also teach international self-development courses, a very inner child, Jungian gestalt type of course before I became a mother. And we did a lot of stuff with mom and dad gestalts and wounded child and, you know, inner child work and having to heal these things. And I learned through that process very well from a lot of amazing men I co-taught with. You know, boys need to be going through some type of rite of passage to become a man from men. Like, I can't teach my son ultimately to take him across that threshold to being a man. I can do it for a girl. I can do it for her to become a woman. You know, girls need the mother. And boys are going to need that father. And I am blessed to have an ex-husband alive. So it's not like and involved. It's not like there isn't a father involved, but it is a little bit different when you are in separate houses and we're not necessarily on the same page. And I'm divorced from his father for a lot of reasons, right? So it's a little bit different to navigate as a mother within that situation to say, okay, well, I don't have as much influence on that man anymore. I can't always say, please talk to him about this. So I'm often the one I'm having the conversations about wet dreams and erections and all, you know, all the things, you know, that I think mom should be able to have. But there does come a point where I'm like, I don't really want to screw this up too much. And what help me? You're like, I need dudes who I see being really good men, good sons, good fathers that I'd want my son to be like. And when I read your book, so he's written this book, you guys, Estrogeneration, How Estrogenics Make Us, what is it? Fat, sick, and infertile. Yeah. I would say also weak ass men I'd put in there. I think that's a subtitle of like what infertile means. Yeah. The kind of guys that don't really make me as a woman feel safe, to be honest. And that's for me, I think is what is driving it. Like, I think as a woman, the older I get, the more I'm aware of, I'm not as tough and strong and independent as I kind of want to think I am. And I need these really amazing, strong, courageous, maybe you want to call them alpha men. I don't know, but I have a lot of those in my life that make me feel really safe. If, you know, I passed out drunk accidentally or somebody roofied me, they got my back and no one's going to hurt me if they're near me. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind, you know, and we both know there's a lot of not men like that, that will take advantage, that, you know, it's a thing little girls are trained to look out for constantly and boys, not so much. And when I had that realization, oh God, like he's going to have sex with people one day and have hair. And I have to speak to my 9-year-old a little bit different because he's about to change. There's going to be a shift. And I wanted to have that empowering conversation, let him know, like, I'm taking care of you. I protect you. I'm stronger than you, but that is going to change one day. Like, you will be stronger than me and you need to be ready for that responsibility, right? That's how I wanted him to understand it. And, you know, like I take care of grandma now, you're going to take care of me. This is how it works, right? And so you better be able to throw me over your shoulder if there be up a fire in our house and get me out. But right now I can do that for you, but there's going to be a moment. And right now he's 16, Anthony. Okay. We're the exact same height. We're about the exact same weight. You know, it's a moment of, oh boy, you know, yeah. Sure. Are you stronger than me yet? You know what I mean? Like, has it happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you were a boy, now you're a man and you're raising boys too, right? Yeah.
You have two boys.
Yeah.
Five kids.
Can I talk about that manhood and with your, what comes up around this, like raising boys in today's atmosphere to become men this is almost like a politically incorrect thing to say.
Yeah, I know. And it starts in the home, right? It starts, I think, physically, right? Because obviously I'm a scientist, so I think that way too. But, you know, if these boys are eating junk food and playing video games and, you know, fast food thinking, all that stuff, it doesn't help. There's going to be some of that, but the more of that there is, the more physically destructive, you know, the food is, the environment is, the more problematic it's going to be, the more difficult it's going to be, more rebellion you're going to see. So I always start, even right with the babies, right? Like we start with bare feet. Mm-hmm. A lot of these parents, you see the kids running around in the yard and they take their shoes off or something. The parents lose their minds and they're running out there, strapping the shoes on quick again. And I'm the opposite. I want the kids to be out without their shoes on, even in the city, right? I live in town. I live in Rochester. So I want them to be out with their bare feet and just developing a healthy relationship with nature. And food, it's the same thing. It's more of a battle because what we're told is almost the opposite of what's good for us, right? We're told to eat a lot of healthy grains, a lot of carbs. You see all these parents giving their kids sugar 5-10 times a day, mm-hmm. and they're wondering why they think the kid has ADHD and all this. And I mean, they're basically giving them cocaine, right? Sugar acts on the cocaine center of your brain. So it starts with these really fundamental things where you have to feed them healthy. You have to have a healthy outlook on their environments. Another pet peeve of mine is baby food. And I know your kid's a lot older than this, but honestly, like,
no, please talk about it. Because yeah, there'll be a lot of moms listening. Yeah,
exactly. Like, you go to the store and you look at the baby food and it's like pureed peaches, pureed pears, applesauce. It's literally just all carbs. There's not even protein in there. There's definitely not fat. Fat is demonized. And that's completely backwards. I mean, the kids love fat. If you give them butter, they'll eat it just straight up. They right. love it.
Why don't you tell them what breast milk is mostly, I'm sure you know, right? DHA. Tell them what breast milk really is.
Oh yeah, it's mostly fats and protein and a little bit of sugar. And of course, unless the mother's just eating tons of sugar, right, then that causes the breast milk to be higher in sugar, and that's a problem in itself. But the brain is 1/3 DHA. It's fish oil, right? Like, our brain is physically made of cholesterol and fish oil as the main two components. And so you've got to give those fats to your kids. I give them fish oil straight up on a spoon when they're little. And of course, my wife takes fish oil pills when she's pregnant and all this. So just developing a really healthy brain through a healthy diet, through a healthy perspective, I think is a really important thing right off the bat. And then exercise, right? Like, you have to make time for exercise for them. It has to be fun. It has to be physical for the boys. We're constantly wrestling and things. The girls could not care less about wrestling. My boys demand it.
I think that's really important. And I want you to talk about this, because like, how this all started was, I was writing a men's health book, and it had like 7 chapters, and I was basically 7 keys, the blah, blah, blah. But really it was a secret way to write it for my son. And I had to pause it. I'm like 12 or 13 chapters in, but it was like one of the chapters was warrior training. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, you must be physical. And it was prompted by the amount of patients I have. So I specialize in brain stuff, mental health. So a lot of ADHD, autism, anxiety, depression with a lot of children, sensory integration disorders. Why the barefoot thing is huge to me. I hate shoes as well. They're an abomination. They're ruining the brain development, but that, we maybe talk more about that. But I try to explain when all these moms would want to put the boys in what? Yoga. I'm all like, right. Oh God. I'm like, no, he needs to box. He needs jiu-jitsu. He needs grappling. He needs to get punched in the face. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, what? And I get the sensibilities of women. We just don't want our men to be violent, fighting, aggressive, because we may have gone through something like that. That might be why they divorced the dad or whatever, right? So this is fear of this boy turning into a violent man. And often very unconscious, sometimes from direct, history, and then moving towards these things. These boys don't want to do this, and they're not into it. And instead of feeding that primal drive of warrior training that boys need, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was a big aha that I saw it so much in my office. I went, oh no, am I doing the same thing to my son? And I put him in boxing immediately. Right.
Exactly. Like, if you can't do it yourself, find a channel, right? Like, find the jujitsus and the wrestling and all that kind of stuff. I played hockey growing up. That was my thing. I had 3 brothers though, so it was pretty easy to find outlets. We used to do karate on each other and all kinds of stuff. It was constant, right? And so it's nice to have siblings that you can beat up on and mess around with. And because if you don't have that channel, it'll become dysfunctional, right? Like, you'll be smashing a computer or something that you shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. Instead of like a healthy, fun outlet, it turns into some like dysfunctional thing. And then you don't really know your own powers, and you don't really know where the limits are, and you don't know what other people can do to you as well. Yeah. Because there's a lot of respect, right? Like, if you learn jujitsu, you learn that there's always somebody who's better than you. You can always get strangled. And so you don't want to be getting into fights with people, because you never know if somebody's going to legitimately choke you out or kill you. And So you kind of learn the limits a little bit, and you learn to respect the limits instead of thinking that you're the man and you're unbelievable and you can do anything. You learn, yeah, no, there's definitely some respect that you need to have for other people, even if they look like they can't do anything physically, they can still whip you sometimes physically. So you learn a lot of these limits and you learn the respect that you need for that. And at the same time, it's healthy, right? Like, it's healthy for your mind. It's something our ancestors did. You know, they weren't just sitting at desks all day looking at books or whatever. I mean, they were out climbing in rocks and, you know, who knows, but outdoor activities, hunting, fishing, collecting stuff, probably. I mean, it depends what country you came from, what tribe you came from. Some people definitely need this more than other people. And you got to know your kid, right? I mean, everybody, that's the beauty of homeschooling. I mean, I homeschool. And so I know my children a lot better than most people, most parents, because I'm with them all the time. So I kind of know, well, they need to do this and they need to do that. Like when we were just on a fishing trip last week in Wisconsin, I live in Minnesota. We went to Door County, Wisconsin. It's like a little peninsula on the northeast corner that goes up into Lake Michigan. I went there specifically for stand-up paddleboard, smallmouth bass fishing. So you can stand-up paddleboard is, you know, everybody knows what those are, but mine has foot pedals on it. So I can actually, it's like an elliptical. So I go up and down the foot pedal and it moves really fast and it has a handlebar. So it's easier that you're not falling over. And I mounted like a little cooler on the back so the kids can sit on the back. And then I have fishing rod holders in there and we have two fishing rods. And I usually bring one kid out for a couple hours and I go back and get another kid for a couple hours. And it's sight fishing. So you're standing up hot high and the thing is real quiet and stealthy and you're looking for fish, right? And then of course, when you see a fish, I have a fly rod and I was fly fishing. And then the kids have a regular rod, which is easier to cast. But the funny thing about it, the reason I bring it up is we stayed at an outdoor campsite, which we do all the time, but this one had a heated swimming pool and literally like the kids would wake up in the morning and they'd go swimming and then like they'd eat lunch and then they'd go swimming again. And I had a hard time getting them out to go fishing, even though normally that's all they would want to do is go fishing because it's kind of boring to sit around the campsite. But it's like, well, that's fine. Like I'll go fish by myself. If you guys hang out, the in-laws had come over too to help watch the kids and hang out. So I didn't feel like I was just leaving the kids, but I definitely fished a lot less than I was planning to fish because, you know, the kids ended up just wanting to swim and that's a good activity. There's nothing wrong with that. So just like I say, knowing the kids and knowing what they need, because they don't get to swim that often, but maybe if I had a pool and they were tired of swimming all the time, you know, I would have had their focus elsewhere, just getting to the beach and running around in the sand, just physical things, outdoor things, healthy things, you know? And again, part of that's knowing the kid, because my kids just freaking love the water. And I'll give you an example of a little difference between my boys and my girls. I have three girls. Girls real careful about the water. I mean, they're good swimmers now, but shoot, when they were little, they were always kind of cautious, whatever. So my son, he's 7 years old right now. When he was 1.5 years old, so he just, you know, he learned to walk. He started walking at 9 months. A little bit earlier than most people, but nothing crazy. I don't encourage them to walk early, by the way. This is kind of going back to development. I always want them to crawl as long as they can because it develops their back better. It's healthier for them. So a lot of these parents are trying to get their kid to walk by holding their hands up all the time and kind of pushing down their throat. Let them crawl as long as they want. But at some point, the kid's just going to start walking and standing up and all that. So anyways, he starts walking at 9 months. He's about 1.5 years old. And we went to a swimming pool. And like the deep end is maybe 10 feet or whatever, 7, 8, 9 feet. I can't remember. And he goes right up to the edge and just walks right in. And of course I'm in there. So I snag him out, pop him up. And he does it. He thought it was the greatest thing ever. And he goes and he goes in again and he sinks right down to the bottom. I just let him go. And then I go down and pick him up and bring him back up. And he's under the water, just like the mouth open, just like holding his breath and just eyes huge and all this. And I just put him on the edge and he goes right away and does it again. And it's the scariest thing, right? Because you have to watch him because he'll just go right into the 10 foot and just sink right down and just wait for me. And he thought it was hilarious. My girls would have never done that, right? And so there's definitely differences and a lot of people try and deny that, but you have to, like I say, you have to be aware because it's straight up dangerous if you're not watching him a little bit closer, but you also just have to kind of go with it, right? It's good for him to kind of develop some of that sense of like adventure.
Yeah. So let me, so again, it's interesting. I'm like, was your wife watching this?
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah. She knows me. Like she knows him.
Yeah. It's good. Like he's there and it's going to be, but yeah, that's a definite, like, okay. Even though I, as a mother, my whole body was like, oh, but, and as the doctor, I'm like, well, yeah, but that's okay. Because, well, you know, it's like a very different response. Yeah.
Well, when the babies go in water, they automatically just hold their breath. They have like this instinctive response. And at some age, they kind of lose it and they panic and they start trying to breathe or whatever. But when they're super little like that, it's actually shocking to see it when they just go underwater and hold their breath. If you got goggles and you watch them, it's like, oh, okay, he's just chilling. Obviously, you got to bring him up pretty quick.
Yeah, I did that with my son. We started like swim lessons, I don't know, like 3 months old or something like that. So we went to this very special baby goldfish swim. It's called the Michigan. So he was all up, all in the water. It is one of those moments of like, they're like, it's fine. I'm like, wow. And even though you see the videos, when you watch your own child, they're like, no, just trust me, he'll be fine. Like he was in water and you though, you know, which is a weird thing, right? That humans develop like fish things. You know what I mean? Like people forget that. Like, you know, we're like kind of amphibian things, right? We're in water and breathing our pee and stuff. That's what we did. And then to come out and breathe air, that's a shock, right? It's pretty interesting. Go ahead.
All that stuff, all that physical stuff, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, like you say, wrestling or something where you're directly interacting with somebody else, even swimming independently, where he's just chucking stuff in the water and diving down and having a good old time. I mean, all that physical stuff is also an outlet. I don't want to underestimate the importance of that, because, you know, I just think you have to have a little bit of both, and it depends on the kid to find that balance. And the parents, it is part of the parent's job to figure that out, you know, like to watch close and just observe and see what the kid needs and try and like accommodate that, because everybody is different. But the problem today, of course, is that the video games and all this is so designed to basically entrap their attention span and to just really like overstimulate the kids and to suck them into this. So if you allow that, then they don't want to go outside, they don't want to wrestle, they don't want to whatever. So you can suppress all of that natural, healthy, physical, you know, stimulation by overdoing the TVs and the computers and the phones. And a lot of parents do that. And part of it, it's laziness, because it's easier to just give them a phone and say, sit down here and I'll come back in 3 hours, right? Right. And so at the end of the day, you get out of parenting what you put into it. So if you put in the time and you really get to know your kid and you really spend a lot of time with them, and then if you have something that you need, you tell them, I need this, I need your help with this, you need to go out and mow the lawn or whatever, they'll do it because they respect you and you have a relationship. If you never developed that relationship and you didn't put the time in, you didn't put the effort, then you just end up with a huge battle on your hands, and it just amplifies and gets harder, especially when you have a lot of kids. You basically you get what you put into it, you get out what you put in. So it's worth putting in the extra time to not just, like I say, shove these distractions on them, especially with the Instagrams and the Facebooks and all this other stuff. I actively make sure that they don't have that stuff or minimize that stuff as much as possible, unless you're on an airplane flight or something. And then it's like the best thing ever, because the kids never watch TV. And then all of a sudden, here's an iPad, and now we'll sit still for 3 hours and be super quiet and everybody's impressed, right?
Today's episode is brought to you by the most effective magnesium product on the market today, Magnesium Breakthrough. Why does it matter? Because 70 to 80% of us are deficient in magnesium, and this may be the largest health problem we're facing today. Three things chronically deplete us of magnesium: stress, sugar, and medications. But Magnesium Breakthrough, taken every night, will begin to bring balance to over 300 reactions depending upon magnesium every single day. You can check it out with the link in the description. Go to my store, brainandbodysolutions.com/shop, or go to bit.ly/magdrremke. That's bit.ly/magdrremke. Magnesium Breakthrough.
And so there's exceptions where you can actually pull out those things and use them as tools, but most of the time you don't have to. And parents go the opposite direction where they think, oh, I'm helping the kid by giving him this math program on, you know, Candy Crush or whatever. And in reality, I think it's really unhealthy.
So I would deeply agree. And this might be very difficult for parents who are listening to hear this, right? So I don't know if you want to expand on that into any like neurology, stress hormones, or what you know about that. I know you do specialize in reading genetics and customizing programs. You know, you're going to be telling me you worked for the Mayo Clinic, what you kind of did and how you know. Maybe you tell me briefly that, like what your backgrounds are around this, and then we can talk a little bit more. But I am adamantly, I'm a Waldorf, you know, school mom. So I was, and I knew that reading about it in college. So when I was studying, you know, biology, developmental biology and neurology, it was very clear to me, media, TV, these things, none of that stuff. I didn't want any part of that for some mythical child I didn't even have at the time. Mm-hmm. And the more I got into it, doing what I do, neurofeedback and other brain therapies, it became like blatantly obvious. So I haven't owned a TV for 20 something years. My son didn't have any of those experiences. Yeah. It was the first time, like we didn't even do it on a plane. I just distracted him and actually interacted and read books and people, you know what I mean?
When you have five kids, it's a little harder.
No, totally. Right. So, and that's another thing, because he's an only child and there's a very, I'm the youngest of four. And my mom always said, you know, the more, the easier it is. Actually, like, oh God, the one is much harder. You get more and more and more, then they entertain each other. They play with each other. They take care of each other. Right. Yep. Oh, and yeah. My generation, right, there's a lot of us only having like one kid now. And it's really hard. So like that we don't have the pack. He doesn't have friends built into the house the way I did. There's a different level of loneliness that comes with that. There's a different level of either the parent must be deeply involved and then helping create some of the stuff, because finding kids that like they don't run the streets, like the parents don't do what I do. Like, I mean, you have to like work often to be like, can your kid come out away? And so my son often struggled in the neighborhoods and stuff. He's like, Mom, I don't want to play the video games. I want to ride my bike. And I want to do like, but often children aren't allowed. They're not allowed to come out. They want the parents want them watched all the time or whatever. Right. So there's a lot that goes into the way parenting is happening today. And I think the TV and the phones and the iPads, whatever, is a way parents who are overworked, they working way too many jobs, there's that financial burden and they have to find a way of entertainment, which used to be kids and outside and play in the street and I'll see you later. Kind of come back when the lights come on. That's how it was when I was a kid. Just I'll see you at dinner. Don't bother me, mess up my house. That's what it was like. Get out of the house. Literally, my mom would close the door, go away. I don't care what you do, but I'm cleaning or I'm whatever. You can't come back. And that's what it was fine. we had plenty of kids to hang out and do things with. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. And in fact, I've had a patient who had a neighbor called DFACS because her boys were playing in the front yard. And I was like, they thought it was dangerous. That's and they live in like $1 million house. I couldn't even believe that this was happening in Atlanta. Right. I think people are doing that for a number of reasons. And also the parents are dissociating and they can't handle their own lives. So they've got to be on TikTok or Instagram. And then they're creating that same problem with their children. So now we just have a complete lack of connection. So, you know, you talked a lot about connection. And so when people put the screen in front of children, babies, you know, even in toddlers, can you speak a little bit to the neurology or what's happening with the connection and brain-wise in that child?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, but I'm probably not as expert as you. I just, you know, I mean, I did 3 years of Alzheimer's research. So I have a PhD in biochemistry, right? So molecular interactions. And then I do genetic consulting. So DNA consulting, look at people's genes and try and optimize their health.
And it's okay if that's not really, I didn't know if you went down, because I go down that pretty far. And it's a very shocking conversation that I have to have with a four-year-old who's autistic or diagnosed ADHD, and the parent, they're watching 4 to 6 hours of YouTube a day, the parents will tell me. And I just have to say, what?
Yeah.
And it's, Well, it's just sad though that nobody else has come along and said that's bad for your child. The pediatrician, they're going to a pediatrician all the time. They're getting juiced up all the time. They're getting antibiotics all the time. No one's telling you this might be why your child only has five words, is because they never look at humans in the eye because they're always watching cartoons. I just don't know. The level that we're failing our children in that regard is high to me.
Yeah, I think it's like fast food, right? Like fast food tastes really good. It's designed to stimulate your brain. It's designed to make you feel warm and fuzzy. It smells really good. It's comfort food, right? It activates the opioid receptors. It's literally like heroin. I mean, that's why they put gluten, so much gluten in there and so much casein from dairy proteins. Look these, like if people are interested, look up opioid food peptide on Wikipedia, opioid peptide. And there's a section that says exogenous. And then there's, it talks about casimorphine and gluteomorphine and gliadorphin. There's like glutens and dairies, proteins that activate your opioid receptors. It's physically addicting. And these food companies know this and they put a lot of this stuff in there. And like I say, it's fast. You get what you want. You know, you get gratification. So it further kind of reinforces this vicious cycle of like unhealth, because it's definitely not good for your body. Everybody knows that, right? And people still are going there because you're feeling so good about it. And then you leave and then you want it again. So you go back and then you kind of satiate that feeling that you missed. And then you leave and then you go back. And the same exact thing I think happens with screens. It's just more on a mental level instead of just a stomach level, where you're satiating something with these quick images, these bright colors. Kids love these cartoons a lot more than the real videos of somebody actually doing something. And it's because it's fast food. It's not good for them, but they would prefer that, right? They prefer to eat candy every meal. And as parents, we know that's bad. So we have to be the ones that make the decision. This idea, like let the kid decide for themselves. It's silly, because parents for thousands of years didn't do it that way, and neither should you. It's just not in our DNA. It's not in our nature to just let the kids decide for themselves, especially in a culture that's full of fast food media, fast food images, you know, on YouTube, whatever, fast food, actual fast food. All that stuff kind of falls into the same camp in my mind. And you have to think of it that way, where sure, once a year, like you go on a flight to Hawaii, right? Or something, whatever. But
yeah,
in general, you see, even there, you should recognize it's not good for your kid. And, you know, like,
right.
And you, but at least you're not going to, you know, have some long-term ramification when you cheat once a year. Right.
Right.
But if you're doing it every day, you should recognize that's terrible for the kid mentally. And then that just opens the door to all this nonsense propaganda too. Like, you know, everybody can agree that there's a lot of propaganda out there in all kinds of different directions. And you know, when you go down these YouTube rabbit holes, even if it's a kid channel or whatever, I mean, it frustrates me to no end to watch these Disney shows where they make Bambi out to be, you know, like these deer out to be like Bambi, and you don't want to hunt Bambi, because I'm a hunter.
Yeah, so you're a hunt, which is good to say, but like really, like we don't think about the amount of manipulation that mm-hmm. goes into like the selling of the products, whatever the product might be. And right. It's, we would never let 30 guys come in our house that we don't know and start telling our kids all kinds of things without us listening. Well, that's what you're doing, because they have whole crews of marketing psychologists. That's what they're doing. You know, it's fascinating.
Super influential. Yeah. I mean, especially in light of the scientific research on wildlife management, right? Like when you get into the research on how wildlife experts are managing these animal populations in a sustainable way with the deer and all this other stuff. Like we're getting healthy food. We're out having fun. We're paying money for licenses. So that goes back into land management. So then it opens up avenues to buying more land for these government organizations. And then they develop that land specifically for more wildlife. And it just, you go out, like I was camping, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago with my son. And we were with a bunch of other guys, and we were camping at this state park. I forget the name of it, but it was basically just all hardwoods, right? And they were protecting it. So it's just a bunch of people that are non-hunters, they're not really outdoorsmen, but they think of themselves as like real nature lovers. And this whole state park was just like a square block of maybe couple hundred acres of just solid hardwoods. It was just big giant trees, and there's no underbrush because the trees basically drown out all the sunshine and everything. And we saw like maybe one bird the entire trip, and all the kids had binoculars and all looking for birds. And there was like so few wildlife on this state park. Ooh. And it was shocking because they don't allow any hunting, right? And meanwhile, I was turkey hunting in Minnesota around the same time with the same son, and I would take my daughters with too. I'd bring two of them usually. And we saw so much wildlife. I was filming a black Bernian warbler, and I didn't even know what it was. I was like, man, that orange looking bird is really cool. Let me film that, come back later and look it up. And I saw an orchard oriole, which I'd never seen before. This is on the same day. And this is public hunting land, which is managed for wildlife. So they do cuts, right? They do burns. They burn the certain tracts of the land so that the new growth, the seed bank can expand, and you get rid of all these invasive species that are taking over. They do all this management. It's very intentional. And then you get these people that watch Bambi and they just discard it all and just think you're just a complete nut and you're ruining the wildlife. And it's literally the opposite. And the reason I go down this rabbit hole, right, is because it's all goes back to the agenda and the propaganda, right, from these crazy movies. Yeah. And it's thick in our entire culture. And I think we have to literally go the other direction and say, look, there's a ton of merit in outdoors, especially for boys, hunting, fishing, getting your hands on something like that, butchering. Even if you don't hunt, bring them to a butcher shop for a day, like do a mentorship, talk to these people. People are very amenable to just like taking, you know, like I used to, my dad's a medical doctor. I used to go and job shadow different professions, like the dermatology. I'd go for dermatology for a day and just follow the guy around. You know, when I was like 16, and you can do the same thing with butcher shops or during deer season, I don't care what state you're in America, they will have deer processing, butchering facilities. You can go there. So again, you have no idea about hunting. How does it work? Nothing, no experience, no nothing. Drop the kid off at an active butcher shop where there's like seven dudes out there hacking up deer all day.
So listen, you know, some mothers just like shat themselves right now, right? They're like,
yeah.
What? They're like thinking that's abuse. I promise you, there are people right now who just went, he is a lunatic, and he just, right? So I will say, I probably would never have thought that, you know, Anthony, when I was a vegan very long time and very anti, I thought hunters were like kind of crazy lunatics. Why would you want to kill a Bambi? You know what I mean? Propaganda. And I get it. I fell for all, I got it, right? Because I was, you know, brainwashed in those things. You know, meanwhile, I never showed any Disney to my child. He saw his first movie at 12 years old, right? And it was like, because it was a birthday party and it was like a thing. And that's when I was like, well, it's time, you know, like, you know what I mean? I'm like, you're going to watch The Karate Kid. Like I started pulling all the old, I'm like, look, I'm going to pick the movies. You know what I mean? We're starting with some things.
That's when they actually wrote really good movies. Yeah. Like,
I started
some good ones, like, that are really, writing.
Yeah. I'm like, trust me. I'm like, I want you to see some old, like, you know, we're about to watch Top Gun. I'm like, oh no, we're going to watch the Top Gun so you can see, you know, the start. But anyway, that idea of people knowing where food is really coming from and how it is, I think it's particularly that nature of hunting, the primal, the connection, I think is critical, especially talking about boys becoming men. And it is my son, and he was born with this innate desire to be connected to the land, to be connected to primal ways. And he's got two city slicker parent Yankees who have no idea about any of this stuff. But I'm like, oh God, okay. So I got to figure out who knows how to fish and knife throwing and axe throwing and survival. And he can bust coal fire. Like he's got all this, he just does, that's the kind of camps and things he goes to, like out, like wilderness, like primal kind of stuff. And when he said to me at 12, he's like, Mom, the thing is, I want to be the kind of man that can have one backpack packed smartly. Like I know exactly what I need and I can last in the woods for a year. He's like, but I'm going to, you know, and I was like, okay. And he's like, because I know you think I'm crazy. I said, I don't think you're crazy at all. I said, I actually think you're connected to some divine communication much better than me. And you are here to help bring me back to that source. So I understood that. I'm like, you're not crazy, but he was very different than other children who wanted to, it's not like he doesn't enjoy a TV show and doesn't enjoy a video game. He does, mm-hmm. but he just is like, no, he asked for an Xbox at 12. We said, fine. You know what? I got 13 maybe. I'm like, here's the weird kid who's never eaten gluten. He doesn't have a TV. He doesn't know what anything is. You know, I'm like, I guess he needs to have stuff. 6 months later, he said, can I sell it? I was like, what? He's like, you know, honestly, you have to do this like 4 or 5 hours a day to be really good at it. And I don't want to do it that much. Like, it's fun and all, but I'd rather be outside. I'd rather do that. And so it was reading your book, Esther Generation, which is this book, you guys, about hormones and health and going, you break down so much potent science. I think it's the best book ever about estrogen chemicals that are in nature and how we're being poisoned and how it's ruining our endocrine system and leads to a number of things. And it was coming from your studying the water in Florida. For you guys, you need to read this book. I think it's the best book on hormonal health and chemicals in nature that anybody can read is your book. But you wrote it in like this, this really cool novel kind of autobiographical way where we get to know you as a person and coming from up there in Minnesota and moving to Florida and losing your hunting. And so I know, I'm like, you're this outdoors guy and you meet your wife down there. So it's like, you know, all this stuff about you, you feel like, and you reminded me, I'm like, God, my son needs to know this guy. I'm like, I want to ship him up with him for like the summer, because it's the kind of stuff you have this intellectual drive. Right? You want to be learned in college and intellectualism, but I balance with all this physicality and this connection to nature. And I really do see my son kind of almost a lot like you, where I'm like, that's exactly kind of what I could see him being, as some kind of scientist-y guy, maybe inventing something or whatever, but always wanting to have that connection, that primal connection. And hunt and things like that, and not from, and it made me look at the whole thing very differently. And as I got to know a lot of hunters, blew my former vegetarian mind. I'm like, these are the most connected to nature people, most spiritual connected to nature I've ever met. And all of these other people like me, we're completely posing with our recycling bullshit and whatever, thinking we're doing something. And we're not, you know, it's been really interesting. So
one of the things that I've always tried to accomplish now, first of all, with the kids, right? Love of learning is a super important thing that most parents miss. And obviously you've developed that with your kid. A lot of the school system breaks that out of children. They hate learning. They hate books. They hate reading because the school system is set up to kind of say, oh, you're super into your math problem that you're working on right now. We're going to ring a bell and make you stop and move on to something else, and just constantly rip you away from the stuff that you're interested in doing and make you move on to something else and try and make you, you know, like just, you know, better at doing SAT or better at spitting out answers and not really being interested in something and just forgetting about it 10 minutes later and moving on to the next thing so you can spit out more answers. It's not really learning how to think, it's learning what to think. But what you want with your children, I think, is you want to be countercultural in your approach to education. You don't want your children to just be completely reliant on the system, be told what to think. That you want your kids to be the opposite. You want them to learn how to think and think for themselves and analyze things. And it starts with love of learning. So in the education system, you want independence. You want your kids to learn independent thought and to think for themselves. And the same is true of the food system. You don't want your kid completely dependent on the food system and just blindly be going in the grocery store and being told what to buy and saying, oh, this dog food is good for you because it's, you know, it's got a bunch of soy protein and 20 other ingredients, but somehow it's good for you, even though your ancestors have never ate anything remotely like this. And you don't want that in your kids. You want them to independently think in their education, and you want them to independently recognize how to get food and be able to do that themselves. Even if they don't like it, you don't have to push it on them, but at least, you know, if most kids, it's pretty amazing, you know, if you start them at a young age, they love getting involved in the butchering and the hunting and all this stuff. Now, I'm not just saying like going out and shooting something, even the butchering, like you catch a fish, you cut it up, they want to be there, they want to touch it, they want to poke on it. Like, we're literally eating fish tonight for dinner, and I was filleting it because my wife doesn't like touching, it's all slimy. And because I just caught it in Wisconsin, it's literally the same fish we were catching in Wisconsin. And so I cut the skin off, and then I give my wife the meat, and she's cooking it right now. But my little 1.5-year-old boy, Jack, he walks up and he wants to poke it. I just wanted him to smell it, right? Because I want to stimulate all his senses. I like to have him smell cinnamon and have him smell cumin and all these things. A lot of times we just walk over to the spice cabinet and just break things open, and I just have him smell things, and he's super interested. And for the fish, I just want him to come over and sniff it. But then he's like all grabbing it, and he wants to touch it and pet it and just kind of feel all that slimy, weird stuff. And I encourage it. I don't say, oh my gosh, don't do that, right? Like, obviously I'm going to wash his hands after. It is pretty gross, but if he wants to get involved, I want him to be involved right from the beginning, because it's harder. Once you've mismanaged education, it's really hard to reverse that. We know that as Americans, right? Our education growing up has been very mismanaged. We've been taught you need to take history, and you need to take math, and you need to take whatever. You've been taught exactly how you're supposed to learn things, and that's bullshit. Like, you need to learn what you want to learn. You need to pursue education the way you want to learn it. So if your kid loves math and absolutely hates history, well, don't force history down his throat. Just totally get rid of the history book and let him do his math thing. And eventually he'll be interested in how math history developed and Albert Einstein and all this other stuff. And then all of a sudden that'll blossom into some other historical interest, maybe. And if it doesn't, who cares? We don't need somebody who's an inch deep and a mile wide and all these educational things. We'd rather have somebody who's got a lot of depth in a certain subject. At least I would think so, right? Like, most parents, I think, would agree that they'd rather have a child who's like a total genius in math and doesn't know anything about history than somebody who knows a little tiny bit about 10 subjects and just plays video games all day.
So let me say, so if I had to recap, that would, like, one of your big pieces of advice to people would be like, and I've seen you post a lot about homeschooling, would be like, homeschool.
Yeah, I think people almost need to these days.
Yeah. But, so let me ask you like this, or something like this. I did homeschool for about 3 years. I mean, we did Waldorf, Montessori, homeschooled for a while, private tutors, things like that. As an only child, though, when it's high school now, he was very adamant, I want to go to school. Right. Good. I want to be normal. That was the word. I just want normal school. I don't want any of this weird stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And mostly it was because around more children. Like, I want to be around more friendship, more social opportunities, which made total sense because I don't have a tribal community, right? I don't have a village. Neighborhoods aren't like the way they were. And so I'm like, you know what? And I had to respect the teenage, almost manly-ish. I'm in that weird in between state, right? Mm-hmm. Where, because your kids are younger, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, how old's your oldest?
11.
Yeah, so you're still young. I'm telling you, that 13, 14, 15, about 15, it's like 14. I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's this moment of, I got to let him forge his own way and also be careful, like just come in enough to be like, okay, that's a really bad idea. You know, like, offer support. Like, I'm still here. I'm still your parent. And you do have to start making a lot of these decisions yourself. How do you want to do this? What do you want to do? You know what I mean? It's a very different as opposed to when they're five, I'm doing all of it, basically. I'm like, you know, you know what I mean? Like, oh, right. You know,
well, I literally don't think everybody can homeschool. Obviously, I'm a realist, but I think a lot more people can than they realize. And I also think the key to homeschooling, I homeschooled. My parents made me homeschool when I was 13 years old. That's when we started the whole family. I was one of five. Mm-hmm. So I have five kids, but I was also one of five. And they just started us all at the same time. And I hated it. I hated it for about 2 years. And then we were in this homeschooling group and had 50 families, and they did stuff about twice a week. They would do activities. And then it became amazing, right? I literally quit my hockey team because I was still playing hockey and stuff, and I was a team captain. I was still involved in a lot of the public school stuff going on. But what ended up happening as I got more into the homeschooling group, because they were such awesome people, is I started going downhill skiing more. That was part of the homeschooling group in the winter in Minnesota, right? It's just all snow.
Yeah.
We go skiing twice a week as a group, the whole homeschooling group. And then there's nothing more fun than that. I'd rather do that than wake up at 5 a.m. and get yelled at by hockey coaches, right? Even though I love hockey.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't really fun, you know, like the games were fun, but you know, it was mostly practicing and work and all this stuff. And again, it was more effort because I had to drive in there all the time, or my parents had to drive me in. So it morphed into me really loving homeschooling, but it took a while. And the key in that whole situation was the group. You have to have a homeschooling group, and it has to be physical. And if you don't have, if you have a homeschooling group and they don't organize a lot of physical stuff, make it physical. Like get the soccer games going, get the barbecue and the soccer games and the softball games, and figure something out that's active. Because a lot of these homeschooling groups, in my opinion, they fail because they want to do co-ops and they want to do like, here's your math class with the group of people. And they just want to imitate the stupid public school system. And that's the whole idea of homeschooling, is you want to get out of that stupid system. It's set up for Sparta. It's literally set up for a population of people that you want to control. That's where it came from. It came from Prussia. The Spartan system was used in Prussia, Austria, and they'd want to develop a military people. And then it got morphed into this, you know, this industrial age over in the UK, and the Rockefellers were involved in this in America. You can read the history. You know, there's a bunch of books, but John Taylor Gatto is the guy. He's got a book called The Underground History of American Education. If you really want to learn how the American education system was intentionally set up to basically create a people that don't think for themselves, a controllable population to go and do factory work. We don't even have factories anymore. And yet we have this education system that's just entirely designed to make factory workers, just to do what they're told. And that's not what our country needs. And people know that. Everybody knows the education system is screwed up. It doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. Even Chris Sacca, like the billionaire, you know, is out in Montana, investor, Tim Ferriss, you know, like, you go to that from that side of the spectrum all the way over to the right wing side of the spectrum. Everybody tells you the homeschooling or the public school system is all screwed up. The problem is they don't give any solutions. They don't know how to fix it. And I'll tell you how to fix it is you develop that love of learning and you let the kid pursue their interests. You don't have to do that in homeschooling, but it's a lot easier, right? As you know, because once you put them in that system, it's hard to, you know, like to work around all the shenanigans and all the time wasting. And but the social life is super important too. So I like, you know, all that to kind of say the most important time is when they're little, because that's when you need to develop love learning. Because if you miss it there, they probably will never develop a real true love of learning, or it's a lot harder to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like somebody like me, I hated school. I hated learning. I remember sitting in classrooms when I was a little kid, just staring out the window, wishing I was outside doing stuff. And I just never thrived. I didn't like it. But I wasn't a bad student, right? I would get A's or whatever. But then homeschooling, you know, I would go hunting every day. I wake up at 5 a.m. I don't come from a hunting family, by the way. You think I'm like some obsessed hunter, and I definitely am. By the way, one of my goals right now is to shoot a wild turkey in all 50 states. That's one of my
missions. Okay.
So this year I took my daughter turkey hunting in Tennessee. We got a turkey in Tennessee, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, South Dakota, and Minnesota. All while everybody else is sitting at their desks, just drooling and looking out the window and wishing they outside. And
you took your daughter. I like that. You love
my 11-year-old. Yeah. And so even in my career, I've tried to be independent, as you have, right? Like, yeah. I don't even want somebody telling me what to do in my career. I get irritated with that because I grew up making decisions. But again, I don't come from a hunting family. I just learned how to do it on my own. I started with a bow and arrow, just shooting at targets, doing tournaments with the bow and arrow. And I realized it's way more fun to go outside and actually hunt this with this thing. And it took me a lot of years to get a deer and all this, but I go every day. And that's what I love to do. And then it turned into like science and biology and you know, math and whatever, because you have to do some math classes to get to a certain level in chemistry and whatever else. And ended up going to Boston University Medical School, right? So it's a scary thing, I think, for parents, because the parents want to push their kid in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. And so you have to allow that, you have to kind of pull back a little from that modern
like conventional way of thinking what success is, right? Like you ended up with what a parent would say, oh, look, he's a PhD and worked at the Mayo Clinic and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And, but if the
that's not even what matters. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It isn't, but it's like, you know what people like to say the things, right? But if you didn't have that intervention of them saying, here's this, and you being able to go hunt and do what you really love to. I completely agree. I've gone through this with so many patients where they bring a kid in, right, who's like some kind of mechanical math engineer kind of a thing, but they're like failing poetry or whatever. And I'm like, and they're like, well, I was like, I mean,
just worried the kid's not going to get
the kid's never going to be a poet. Like, have you not seen how smart he is? I don't understand why we're talking about this. Screw that class. Really does. I don't care if he get, I mean, what, I guess we have to pass. Why are we even doing it? Like I get it, but everybody doesn't need to be well-rounded, especially, again, I deal with a lot of what we may, the term of, you know, atypical, not neurotypical, autism and other things where whatever labels have been put on somebody, very, very smart. And they say, well, you know, but he hyper-focuses on this. I'm like, yeah, because he's going to be a zoologist. I mean, he's clear. Are we all not clear? And that's what's happening. Like, wouldn't it be nice to just know that? Because like, there's no confusion in this kid. I guarantee he's going to be a PhD in that weird thing. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, and that's fine because he can have a life. And it's always what, a quirky professor or some weird researcher, who cares? You know what I mean? Like socially, not maybe Dale Carnegie, win friends and influence people type of salesman, but not everybody is going to be that. And the schools will want to do this well run. And I'm like, I don't understand. You're getting it. You like math. You should get a math tutor. You shouldn't get a math tutor in the thing you're, I've always said that. And it's always gone contradictory to the school. You know what I mean? Like if they're doing great in art and bad in math, you get them an art teacher. You get them an art coach. You make them better in the thing they love doing. You don't waste time trying to repair something. You know, other than basic reading, and you're like, if you can read, you can write. Like,
yeah, that's well rounded.
Like, like that's
and
about
the rounded
it.
Stuff comes later with social pressure and stuff. You say like, oh shit, I don't know anything about whatever, and you just dig into it a little bit, and it's fun. And you start getting into it almost too much, and you realize, oh my gosh. Like for me, I got into videography. I never used to like videography, but it's like, well, it's kind of fun to video the hunts with the kids. And it's fun to go back and watch them with the kids, and it's fun to edit them and stuff. And I just learned that whole thing. And so, you know, it sometimes just flowers out into something that you wouldn't have wanted to take a class and learn. Yeah. But if you're doing it yourself and it's interesting and you've learned to love learning, then that stuff sometimes comes. And if it doesn't come, who cares? I mean, that's what makes people interesting and unique and more interesting to talk to, right? Because most people in our culture today, you try and talk to them, have a conversation with them, and they're just like, yeah, I went to work today from 9 to 5 and I got home and watched TV. And it's like, well, there's nothing to talk about there. And so they're just boring and their lives are boring and it's unfortunate. And they're depressed, of course. And they're on Prozac and Zoloft and Lexapro.
Yeah. And well, that's interesting. Yeah, you're right. And so I was going to leave you that question. Like, so when I say to you, like, I want my son to be a strong man, like, what does the word, because again, that to me is a big part, because we have a massive mental health, you know, crisis, and you can see it, like, it's not only in the adults, it's in the children now. And I think that's where this stemmed from, is where I want to write a book for my son so other parents can read, like, these are the things I think are important for you to know now. If I drop dead, these are the guidelines, these are the rules. And for me, it starts with a very stable brain, right? Stable body. And you've alluded to that. You said all this stuff. And when I've posted the word strong man, like I want him to be a strong man, I've gotten some really triggered, bizarre responses to that. I had no idea that it reminded me of the old, you know, carnival strongman thing where they use the hammer on the bell or whatever. That's what I kind of, oh yeah. And it was just very quick. A friend of mine said it he's like, well, it's a strongman podcast. I'm like, Matt, that's the name. I just, I gave it no thought. Mm-hmm. But that word triggers people. Sure. And I've had a lot of people say really weird stuff to me that I'm like, wow, I had no idea. Our definition is of this is very different. You know what I mean? So when I say that to you, what comes up for you?
Yeah. Well, I think body, mind, and soul. I break down into three parts, even though we're all all of those parts. And so I think spiritually you need to be strong, right? You need to have strong character, strong morality, so that even if somebody else is doing something that's legal, but it's immoral, you're not taking part in it. That's the spiritual aspect, the soul. You need a strong mind, like we talked about. That's physical, that's mental, that's, you know, it's DHA. It starts with diet. It starts with interacting with your environment in a proper way, loving learning, loving education, pursuing that. Strong mind, and then a strong body is another aspect of that. And this is all part of just being independent and being healthy. And again, counterculture, make sure you're counterculture. If you're not countercultural today, you're doing something wrong. And I think lifting weights is a really key component of that. It helped me a lot. I didn't learn how to lift weights properly until I was doing my PhD. And it made a huge difference in my overall health.
It helps men psychologically. I think there's a strong, like, almost it's becoming a rite of passage, I think. Like, we don't have rites of passage. And I'm very, I don't know if you have you looked at that in terms of tribal, like that's something that's so deeply missing, which is why we have so much gang violence and then prison, and why that culture because it become rites of passage. Military provides it. That's now the kind of the only thing I see. Like, these are the only things I kind of see that people have, like boys have. Sure. Because well, we've stripped away like hunting as the norm. We've stripped away like the father teaching the trade, like you're gonna learn how to rebuild the car engine. You're gonna men don't even mow their grass anymore. Men don't clean their gutters. You know what I'm saying? It's become the status of manhood now is to pay other people to do everything for you. Not do it yourself.
Like, that's why I said you have to be counterculture. I literally, my 7-year-old just mowed the lawn and I made my boy do it. My wife's like, oh, have the 11-year-old do it. No, I want him to do it because he's proud of it and it's a physical thing. And I could hire somebody to do it. I actually don't want to. I want to make it miserable for him. And he's proud of it and I pay him for it, right? I mean,
my son started at 7 mowing the grass too. That's hilarious. And he loves it.
He just cut up one of my gutter things and stuff. It's just like, you just got to roll with it because it's part of the learning process. But I think the deadlifting is a really important tool. Deadlifting and squatting specifically. When I started doing those, they really helped me just develop overall and kind of wake up to what it feels like to really be strong, right? I had a weak low back. I was always hurting my back. Just overall weak. You don't want to be a weak human, men, women, child, it doesn't matter. You want to be healthy, robust, resilient. That goes for your immune system, your diet, your brain, your body, mind, soul. So I always just think body, mind, soul, how can you be stronger, more independent? Think of it in those three categories and really pursue that for yourself and for your kids. And, you know, it's a good place to end, but also a good kind of thing to bequeath for your future generations, you know?
Yeah. So if you had one piece of advice, you got to think about it. It's very different. Again, I know it's weird because I ask men about giving advice to a woman. Like, okay, I know, I'm telling you, I need men around to help my son become a man. And there's a lot of single women around, you know, you guys are blessed to not be in that situation. But God forbid something could happen to you and your wife's going to be alone with the kids, right? It's like for a while or whatever is going to happen. You know, life does what life does. Yeah. Things happen. My mother was married and my father then was gone. And it was like, okay, now what, right? I got to figure this out. And like a lot of women, she was afraid to remarry because she was always thinking of something. She was thinking of me and my sister. And ironically, both my brothers were sexually molested and the girls were not, not by it, but she like was very scared of remarrying because of just, what if I make a mistake and bring the wrong person in the house, I think. So we didn't have anybody really around for the boys. And my brothers both ended up with a lot more problems than my sister and I. And through my frustration of dealing with this at times, my mom had to told me this when I was about 19 or 20, she's like, you don't understand. It's harder for them because you had me. They didn't have a father. They needed that. And because they didn't, that's why I do more for them. That's why I give them more slack. That's why, I mean, she was making more excuses. And I'm like, what are you doing? Because she felt guilty because she wasn't able to give them something. She was, you had me, I can't be a man. I did the best I could, but they're hurting and they're lost because of that. You know?
Oh yeah.
So she, you know what I mean? So like at thinking of, and I always remember that, I'm like, right. And my son's father is 22 years older than me. So he's in his 70s. Okay. So he's fit and everything, but I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm like, I'm trying to record these and get advice and things, messages kind of for other single moms out there in that position of, okay, you know, and sometimes the advice is you got to find men. You're going to have to find men. Okay. Usually that's you guys all say the same
thing. I think you have to, but the other thing I would add to it too, I think you need mentors, right? Whether you're learning a career, whether you're learning manhood, you know, like my wife and I are totally different. Like when my son falls on the ground, I just sit there and look at him and wait for him to get back up and see what his reaction is. And she'll go, right? Like, and some of that is just a natural difference in men versus women. And people have to acknowledge that and stop pretending men and women are the same. And, you know, I think the best mentors though, are the, like I say, the outdoors, you got to figure out the outdoor, somebody who does the outdoor thing. Like for me, I learned trapping as a kid, and that's super countercultural to actually get a trap out and to learn how to catch a beaver. That was the first animal I ever trapped. I don't come from a trapping family. Like I say, my dad's a medical doctor. He's never done any of this.
Who taught you that?
Some old dude who was like an alcoholic. But he taught that he was the firearm safety instructor, because in order to hunt, you have to get a firearm safety certificate. That you can actually purchase a hunting license. You can't even buy a license without having this certificate. And it's like a multiple week class. And he was the instructor for that class. And, you know, he just happened to know how to trap beavers, and he taught me how to do it. And it's surprisingly humane. It's totally different than what people are indoctrinated into thinking what it is. You're actually using a trap that kills them instantly. And if you don't control the populations, by the way, what you end up doing is they just hire government employees to do it. And then they waste the beavers. They just bury them in landfills and stuff instead of actually using the furs that they send over to Russia and China and stuff for the markets. Because these are renewable resources. And the beavers, if they get overpopulated, I know that's a little off track, but if they get overpopulated, their teeth grow. They can't, they need to chew a certain amount of trees per day to grind their teeth down. Otherwise, their teeth just grow right up into their brains and kill them. And it's very slow and very painful. And so it goes back to just total propaganda nonsense. You know, that's really frustrating for me to watch in our culture. And again, be countercultural, but find somebody. You don't have to be a trapper. You don't have to find a trapper, but find somebody who's out in the country. Get out of the damn cities.
Right.
Cities are man-made constructions. There's a lot of artificial stuff going on in the cities. You need somebody who, because when I go turkey hunting, that's the best way to learn a state, right? Because I drive into a state, I have no idea where I'm going to go. Like I literally spend hours on maps looking at public hunting land and marking, like, well, there's a ridge here. There's a river down on the bottom of this ridge. The turkeys are going to like this type of terrain. Let me check that out. I drive all across these states and I check out different properties. And of course I run into all kinds of landowners and people that own land on the borders of public hunting lands. And I talk to them. And most people in America, if you get outside of the city, they are outdoorsmen. They totally understand hunting, whether they do it or not. And a lot of them, that's a huge amount of them do it. The population density is super sparse, but they all do it. So if you know anybody outdoors, or I mean, anybody rural out in the country, they can plug you in. You know what I mean? There's not like a super organized group of people that I can point you to, but
my advice is
find a mentor and find
you
them
out. You can take classes. Yeah, they really are. Like here in Georgia, like how I found, there was a guy that came and spoke at my son at the Montessori, and he brought the hawks and all the stuff. And he's a native, it's Native American primal wilderness survival, tracking what plants are safe, what you can do with everything. And my son was in the second grade, and the amount of notes teachers told me, and he told me all about it. Like, okay, he knew every word of everything. Like he is all about this guy. I was like, okay, what's his name? Looked him up, Mark Warren. He's written many books, actually. He's up in this place called Dahlonega, Georgia. He's got a whole website. He teaches courses. I'm like, we're coming. It's a 45-minute hour drive. Teach all the things. How many classes can he take with you? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then there, you find other people and other resources. So even in a city like Atlanta, you go an hour out anywhere and you can. So that was like an organized thing for me as a mom. That at eight, he could, okay, axe throwing. I'm like, is he good with it? And he's like, so most of the stuff, he's the only kid. He'd be, and so when he did the winter, what like survival, he's like, well, you know, I'm like, it turns out they're all guys, all hardcore survivalists, but my son's cooking bark. He's like, Mom, you can make bark. You can do this. It kind of tastes like chicken. I'm like, you ate bugs? He's like, yep, I did all of it. I went, okay, well, you know, that's, and he's with a bunch of men and learned, they're like, well, you got to come and like hang out. I'm like, sure, I'll sit in the chair in the corner. You know what I mean? Like in case anything is there, but I'm sure he'll be fine throwing knives and embarrassed, because he actually would win and embarrass them. I'm like, I'm sorry. They're like, oh, it's cool, love it. You're like, actually, who's this 10-year-old kid? But I could never find another kid, like a parent, to let, like, he's gonna throw what? I'm like, it's knives. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mothers would just, and they always typically were a lot of single moms and with boys, and they just thought I was a little bit nuts, you know, like thinking of it as weapons.
Our cultural,
yeah, it is.
That's and what I say. You have to have that mindset. You have to.
Well,
single mothers, I think, especially, you have to be countercultural intentionally, not accidentally, not a little tiny bit. Just jump overboard and be that person. And it's worth it. I like what you're doing. I like the way you're thinking. We're on the same page. I think the mentors,
it's because of my son. You know, it's, I didn't think this way. If he came out being a bookworm, and I would have always been anti-media, anti-screens, anti-TV, all that stuff like that. And I would have done outside the way I knew it, which was like sports, but he's not really a sports kid. He's more like, everyone's like, oh, are you upset he doesn't play soccer? I'm like, no, like, just because I care less what he does. Like, I just want him happy. He's driven by survival, backpacking, all this stuff. He knows all this crap. I have, and because that's his genius. That is what he was brought here to divinely do. And I really think it was to also make me connect more to nature too, to pull me out of my comfortable city living. And I do it in comfort. I mean, I do it, we camp, and it's kind of, he jokes. He's like, Mom, can you not bring the down comforters next time? I'm like, no, I'm bringing my down comforters. I'm like, if you want to sleep on the, he prefers to just sleep on the dirt. Nothing. He's like, I can just sleep straight barefoot, because I actually like it better than a bed.
Yeah.
And that's him. Cool. That's his soul. You know what I mean? And that's why I love your book and the stuff that you do. I'm like, hey, he's kind of like a little future you. I mean, you're like a future him. I could see it happening in a way. I hope I don't, personally, I don't want 5 grandchildren. I hope. But you never know.
Right at some point.
Yeah, it's true. So I love that. But that is the general consensus. Men are like, you must find men, period. Yeah. Like, get men to help you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not that complicated. It just takes some courage, because it's, like I said, you have to be countercultural, because it is countercultural, and that takes courage. It's like, if you go to the store without a mask on, and masks are strongly encouraged or something, I mean, it takes courage to do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's the same kind of feeling, where you're going to feel, again, it's part of its training, right? Like, we've been brought up in these public school systems where we're supposed to follow along and do what we're told as a herd and not think for ourselves. So if you step out of that, of course, it's going to be weird for you. Guess what, though? If you, the more you do it, the better you get at it. But also, the more that you teach your next generation to do that, they're totally comfortable with it. It's not even weird for them, which is awesome. So like, this idea that like, oh, homeschoolers are weird and all this, part of it's true, right? Because we are weird, because we don't really care that much about what people think. So if we have, our pants are too high, we don't really care. People are laughing at us. We don't really care. Now, my pants are totally normal level. and you know, all that, but obviously you do find some weirdos, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's going to be a little different, and some people are weird in the public school system, and you know, hopefully they're developing more morality and healthy minds even through their weirdness. But
The word I heard you say, like, the message I hear a lot from you, that was, you said the word independent a lot, and I see that as, to me, you need to be independent, to be resilient, to be able to create freedom for yourself and others, which gives you flexibility to, which is really, for me, mental health is all about flexibility. And like, the people who are not healthy or have unstable brains is because they're not flexible. They're rigid. They're stuck in an unhealthy pattern. They can't get out of it. And you want to bring flexibility. That's where strength is. Strength is in the bamboo that can bend completely in the wind and will not crack like like a hard, stiff, rigid tree. And when I explain that, so that's to me what a strong man is. Very flex is bamboo, you know, flow like water, like Bruce Lee, right? So physically and mentally, spiritually and emotionally. And that's has seemed to trigger some people as if they that meant I want him to be physically must be massively strong, must be some macho guy with a 14-foot beard or something, clearly can't be gay. That's what people were hearing, I guess, because that's their own lens and projection and filter. I'm like, I don't know what part of this is confusing for you. You know, apparently people, like you said, they don't know what a man is or a woman is anymore. I'm very clear on XXXY. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's wrong to say, you know what I mean? I'm like, no, let me be real clear. XXXY, you're a boy, you're going to be a man. If you want to identify as something different one day, that is what it is. But that doesn't change genetics. And that doesn't change that there is a very different development between boys and girls. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's important parents know that girls and boys do develop differently. Puberty hits differently. We have very physical, different hormonal changes. And you need to honor that, you know, like, I have periods.
Yep.
You're going to have wet dreams. I'm not ever going to have that. You're never going to have this. You know what I mean? Like, let's not live in fairyland psychosis and let's talk about what's real. So, and that to me is strength. So I appreciate that message of independence, which leads to building courage, the courage muscle. I used to call it when he was little, like we got to practice the courage muscle. You're going to have to do it even though you're scared. Right. Yeah. And being counterculture certainly does require strength and courage. And what some people might say, you got to have some balls. So, yep. And my balls are my ovaries. So I still got balls.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They make testosterone.
That's right. They're round. I don't know why we don't, when I say that women get mad, I'm like, how do you know I'm not talking about my ovaries? Like, oh, that's a good point. I said, exactly. See, you're being sexist.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony, thank you so much. Tell them where to find, if they want to get your book, find out more about you, hire you for a consultation.
Oh yeah, I recommend it. I mean, my DNA consulting website is called ajconsultingcompany.com. It's a clunky website name, hard to remember, but it's just what I came up with way back when I had it. So ajconsultingcompany.com, that's pretty much my main website.
Okay. And I'll have in the description, you guys, where you can get the book. Is there any link that you care if it's Amazon? You care where?
I don't care. Yeah, no, it's all
okay.
Great. Yeah.
It is one of my favorite. I think like all parents should read that book. Like if you're pregnant or gonna get pregnant or want to get pregnant, this is an odd health parenting book that would be, you would think, why would I recommend this one? But it's so good. In terms of explaining, like trying to stop, offset a whole host of health problems with small choices. And I love how you break down the categories for people, like what level you start off. Okay, you can start the bronze, we can go to silver, you can go to gold. You know, you can decide how far along in this you want to go. Very, very good book. So I'll have it in the description, you guys. It's well worth the read, and it's a very easy read for a science-based book. Actually, it reads like a novel. I really think it's a beautiful, the way you wove the story. Did you actually write it or did you hire somebody?
Oh yeah, no, I wrote it 100%.
God, so good.
My editors wanted me to take out all the stories at the beginnings of the chapters and all that. And I said, no, I'm in charge of it. It's like independence, right? It's like,
it's the best part. It's the best part of the book, really.
Yeah, I wanted to make it readable, right? I wanted to make it interesting, to read, not just like, oh, here's a bunch of facts. It's boring. Yeah. It's dry. It's
are you going to write another book? Are you working on it?
I hope so. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm working on one.
Okay. You're an excellent writer. So I look forward to getting whatever you publish.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. Right. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Awesome. Have a good night. Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
Today's episode is brought to you by what is probably my number one health device to have at home, my infrared sauna. You'll find no EMF in here. It's actually a Faraday cage. Your cell phone won't even work inside the sauna, and you're going to be grounded. So you get light therapy, heat therapy, electron, anti-inflammatory grounding therapy, and more. Go to bit.ly/RimkaSauna. That is bit.ly/RimkaSauna for the best, safest, most effective, and most affordable infrared sauna on the market. And it's portable.